You've crushed it. You've made millions. But let us ask you something. If you stop working today, how long would it all last? For most people, that answer, it's not great.
Right now, everything you have built, your house, your car, the vacations you love, relies on you. If you stop, the money stops.
That's exactly why we created a community for people just like you. No fluff, no hustle or energy, just real self-made millionaires helping each other create wealth that actually lasts.
Ready to build a legacy? Join us now at join.builtbeyondme.com and take the first step towards lasting wealth.
Imagine this, no more grinding for another 10, 15, or 20 years just to keep everything afloat. What if your wealth could start working harder than you do?
In our community, we'll show you how to invest in income-producing assets like multifamily properties and build-to-rent developments. No messy tenant management, no complicated learning curve, just real scalable wealth.
It's not about making millions anymore. It's about keeping it, growing it, and passing wealth beyond you.
Don't just make millions, make them last. Build a future, build freedom. Join our community now at join.wealthbeyondme.com. And that is join.wealthbeyondme.com.
What's been keeping up a lot of investors at night, right? The so-called dark side of multifamily apartment investing is probably one of the things that has been keeping a lot of investors up at night.
Hello, I'm Pommy.
And I'm Nancy.
Together we make the Kitty Sisters.
We're apartment syndicators, entrepreneurs, and educators with big dreams and a $300 million multifamily apartment portfolio.
We're into helping successful entrepreneurs and founders who have a passion for real estate and $100K to $5 million to invest, all aiming to turn their business profits into a lasting legacy through income-producing asset investment.
This is Cashflow Multipliers, a podcast dedicated to your financial freedom and the lifestyle you deserve.
You've probably seen a lot of headlines, skyrocket interest rates that are just crushing deals, massive loan defaults, maybe even looming on the horizon, this threat of oversupply that may jeopardize returns. That's what's making a lot of investors press the pause button, and understandably so. This is what we're going to be exploring today. And by the end of this episode, you may be discovering that the dark side may not be that bad after all. And the next time you hear Luke, I'm your father, you may be running towards the person who said that with open arms. So now let's get into the first thing that may be troubling a lot of investors in the past couple of years. And this is something that may make you feel like Boo in Monsters, Inc. You can know that like Boo had this fear of the monster that was hidden under her bed. But like Boo, with some context and the right approach, it can make something that's super scary become something very cuddly. So the first major thing that we're going to be discussing, obviously, is interest rates. Yes, interest rates has been very volatile, sky-high interest rates. Everyone's talking about it. We've experienced it since 2021 firsthand, given the first transitory nature of inflation, and then it was permanent, and then the solution was raising interest rates consecutively to unprecedented level by the feds. We all have been through that. We know exactly how that felt. So, and with that, a lot of unpredictability came to the market, made investors very nervous, especially when it comes to their current investment properties or finding new properties to purchase. And this is where a lot of investors, I believe, have gotten it wrong. It's not the interest rate itself, you see, that's causing multifamily apartments and other type of businesses in the United States or even the world to have some distress. No, in fact, it's the rapid and unprecedented rise of interest rate that caught us all off guard that's causing the real issue. So given the fact that we understand now that interest rate itself isn't the scary boogie monster, in fact, you know that in the 80s, interest rate were even higher than this. So if not the interest rate itself, you know why? Because it's been proven that in 2023 and 24, people were buying up multifamily apartments and those interest rates haven't tanked their deals. Even us, we bought an apartment complex in 2023 on fixed debt that we assumed from the lender, from the seller at 3.49% with at that time 38 years left on the term of the loan. And there were no distress on that property. And that's because it wasn't the interest rate. It wasn't how high it was. It's because we understood what was happening. A lot of people couldn't have accounted for it back then. The issues is that the financial models that were used to purchase properties in 2020 and 2021 were baking in interest rate somewhere between 3%, maybe 3.5%, even maybe 4%. And that's probably the highest that people were expecting interest rate to be. But obviously things were not the case. Interest rate rose to like 5%, 6%, 7%, 8%+. And that's where the issue really, really came into light. I think people would not expect this, right? Similar quantitative easing happened right before. And we can look back to 2008. 2008 financial crisis happened and it was in the real estate sector. And we saw a lot of money being injected into the economy. In fact, during the Great Recession, there were about $2.5 trillion that went into the to rescue from the Fed. So the Feds at that time purchased about $300 billion in treasury securities, $175 billion in agency debt, $1.25 trillion in agency mortgage-backed securities, and they pumped in $1.2 trillion to reserve banking system. All of that was to help secure the financial sector primarily. And what we saw was that there weren't any inflation. At that time, annual inflation from 2008 to 2013, in fact, were very, very low. 2008 was 0.1%. 2009 was actually negative 0.4%. In 2010, it was a modest 1.6%. 2011, 3.2%. 2012, 2.1%. 2013, 1.5%. Thus, no one expected that if you did similar in during the post-pandemic, that we're going to see that kind of scenario. So during the COVID pandemic, obviously, everyone recalls the amount of financial support that came into the economy. We had the CARE Act, which was a 2022 bill that injected $2 trillion into the economy. The Consolidated Appropriation Act in December 2020, another $868 billion. The American Rescue Plan Act, March 2021, that injected another $1.9 trillion. Who would have expected a different result? And the primary difference that none of us really saw was that during the 2008 Great Recession, the money really stayed inside the banking system. A lot of it wasn't distributed throughout the economy, which is completely contrary to what happened post the pandemic. During the pandemic, everyone were getting stimulus checks. People, businesses, probably even dogs and cats, or maybe dead people. I don't know. Possibly. If someone ever audits it, you may find some of those there, right? So the difference is that now we know the difference is that post-pandemic, the amount of money that was disseminated into the economy really, really, really caused it to overheat to the point where obviously the inflation were where it was. And that is really where the separation happened between the Great Recession and the post-pandemic scenario that we're in today. And that's why we were not expecting to see that kind of consequence. The interest rate hikes is a different scenario than operations, right? So cash flow candidly has been limited on a lot of these properties, but it's not because rents aren't going up. It's not because of occupancy issues. In fact, a lot of occupancy and rent growth have been seen across our specific portfolio. And we have portfolios that span three states, 2000 plus units across different sectors. And so for us, we can see it firsthand that it's not, the interest rate's not playing a role in that at all, impacting the occupancy or impacting ability for us to increase rents. What we've seen is that our apartment complexes, for example, when we bought the property in 2021, the rent was around like $1,100, and now it's close to $1,600 to $1,700. It's substantially higher. And so the issue is obviously well beyond operations. Operations for us, I feel that we've done a pretty amazing job at that part. The thing that goes beyond operations that the industry and business world in general have experienced is servicing the debt that's underlying the property. And to give you some context, prior to the pandemic, a lot of the large multifamily apartment properties were purchased through agency debt. And the two primary agencies that were lending out substantial amount of money, probably 80, 90% of this was purchased through them, was Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae. Both of these lenders, right after the pandemic started happening, they tightened up their investment approval process substantially. I think it's sort of like a PTSD moment from 2008, and they wanted to make sure that there's no chance of having a widespread wave of default that's going to happen. So they tightened their lending criteria substantially to the point where it was almost not feasible to use them very often. And so came in these bridge lenders, and bridge lenders basically are debt funds and other institutions who have money and feel like, hey, they wanted to fill the void. So what they did was they offered 3 years plus 2 year extensions on a floating debt. So it's basically the debt rises and fall based on a certain index plus a spread that they earn. So guys, if any of this doesn't make any sense, or it sounds a little bit like the first time you've heard it, or it's like about the fire coming out of my mouth. So just if that's the case, join our waiting list for our community, Wealth Beyond Me. In that community, a lot of these things will be answered. A lot of questions will be answered. So don't fear that. Just make sure that you join the community's waiting list. Once it opens, you'll be able to join to get more insight. So back to what I'm talking about with Bridge Dad. So the bridge lenders came into play. They offered more flexible terms. A lot of them underwrote the property at stabilization versus at purchase price. But one of the things that the pitfalls that everyone needed to avoid with bridge lending was because these rates are variable. And so part of the solution to that was to buy rate caps. Rate caps are essentially like a ceiling on how high the interest rate can go. So for instance, on one of our, at that time, the index that we're used to calculate our interest rate overall, so there's two components. The first one is the SOFR 30-day average. That was the index that we our lender used to calculate what our interest rate would be. And the other one is their spread. So that's essentially the profit that they're making, the lender's making off of the loan to us. So these two numbers, so just keep in mind. So at that time, for example, SOFR was almost zero. So let's just say it was 0.5%, just for math's sake. And the spread was 3%. That means the interest rate maximum, if you bought a property and the SOFR was 0.5 or 50 basis point and the spread was 3.5%, that means that your maximum interest rate would be 4%, right? So 4%. If the SOFR average goes up, then you have to pay the difference. So 3.5, if it goes up to 4, then that means you have to pay, 50 basis point, if it goes up to 1 and your spread is 3.5, then that means that your overall interest rate for that month is 4.5%. So you see where we're going, it keeps climbing, right? So in that case, the way to combat that is to buy rate caps. So basically, that sets a ceiling of how high the SOFR can go. If SOFR was 50 basis point or 0.5%, if it goes any higher beyond that, you pay the interest, but you get reimbursed for it by the rate cap provider. That's a great thing, right? So that's a fail safe. So let's buy a rate cap. Hey, SOFR keeps climbing, no problem. So today, to give you context, SOFR is probably around like 4.6%. I think I checked yesterday. So SOFR, if we enter the deal and we're paying interest today, if we didn't have a rate cap, today's SOFR, that's for easy math, 4.5%. The spread is 3.5%. That means we're paying 8% overall interest on the property when at the original time of purchase, we were underwriting for 4%. You can see where the issue comes, right? With the debt service. You were expecting your property to cash flow, to support the payment, the mortgage, et cetera, at a 4% or a little bit above that. And then you end up having a scenario where today it's 8, but it would have been even higher a few months back. And that's why the rate cap comes into play and it helps protect that, right? So if someone bought a 50 basis point strike, that's what it's called, on the rate cap, and you have a 3.5% spread, that means that your interest on the time duration that the rate cap is in the policy is in force, the duration of the policy, you only pay 4% interest. So that's a great cap. And that scenario is actually what happened to us. So we bought a property back in 2021 and we had a 50 basis point strike. And that was a really nice cushion because it prevented us from having to experience like the dramatic debt service shock, right? Paying a substantially higher mortgage. Imagine if your mortgage payment was easy thing. Like if it doubled like that, it used to be $100,000 and now it became $200,000, or it was $1 million and now it became $2 million. Imagine how much harder it'll be for you to support the property's growth. And that's, in general, a lot of the reason that people are feeling distressed in terms of interest rate today. So the other thing to consider with that is some people didn't even buy rate caps. So imagine when it kept escalating, they had a hard time because now not only maybe the property can't support that level of debt service, but at the same, and also now it's not just operations that coming out of someone's pocket. And that's where you risk default on the property. So, okay, the solution is rate cap, which is great. So when the property that gave you an example that we bought for 50 basis point, the loan on it wasn't that high. The purchase price of the property was like 16 plus million. So the loan wasn't that substantial. We paid around $40,000 to $50,000 for a 50 basis point strike. The problem is the insurance company, they're not going to let you just buy that for the same price when interest rates are climbing because it's going to come out of their pocket. And so at some point, they started also raising their premium. That's where the problem happened. So a $50,000 policy became $400,000 policy. And that was on like a $4, $5, $6 million loan. Now, when you think about deals that are $20 million, $30 million, $40 million, $50 million in loans, that rate cap price becomes in the millions of dollars in some of these properties. And that's where the distress comes into play. So that's, I digress, and that's sort of like the context. Just want to give you guys an idea of how the interest rate gets calculated and how that really really contribute to the distress of a property. Today, interest rates starting to stabilize, if not decline. And so we're in a different phase. Like I told you at the beginning, it was we didn't have the ability to predict that interest rate was going to skyrocket because of the unprecedented nature of how quantitative easing impacted the post-pandemic world versus the Great Recession world. We didn't see that coming. Properties were purchased on bridge loans. Therefore, we had to buy rate caps. It's not the interest rate on most of these properties that have good operations. It's the rate cap that's screwing people. And anyone who's a lender, who's investing in deals, if you have capital calls, primarily the reason for the capital call is to buy a new rate cap. Okay. So those were the reality of properties that were purchased back in 2020, 21, 22. And I would dare to say that that's less of an issue in 2023 and 2024. Because of what? Because it's been accounted for. A lot of these things happen because we didn't account for certain scenarios. And a lot of, you know, it's a cliche saying, like, once something happens, people say, if only I knew, right? And that's exactly the same thing. Now we know. And so when you're looking to buy properties today, the financial model changed. Instead of trying to buy properties for like a 3-4% overall interest, now that amount is lower, right? So therefore, not lower, it's higher. So you have that expectation, and it makes it so easier for you to model these things. So it's not a moving target. Let me give you an example of this. Today's world is completely different. Last December, we signed a $29.5 million loan for a construction project that we're building townhomes north of Dallas. We're building 118 townhomes. This is for the vertical construction phase, only the vertical construction phase. On the deal, because we underwrote the deal in probably like March of 2024, the numbers that we used to underwrite was around 9%, 9 to 10% overall interest rate with a rate cap on top. So our expectation is that interest on this property, it'll still perform as expected. If we're around like 10% interest rates. So fast forward to December when we actually signed the loan agreement, the interest rate is actually lower than that. And that's a difference, because now we understand that we're in a higher interest rate environment. We underwrote it differently. And that's why the property doesn't have the same risk structure as properties that were purchased in 2021 and 2022. Even the rate cap that we purchased last week on this property is actually at a lower point than our underwriting. So basically, we expect interest rate to be 9 to 10%, for example. And we bought the rate cap so that the ceiling on what we have to end up paying should interest rate continue to rise, it's actually lower than what we financially modeled, meaning that it's a safe space. And also, on top of that, we bought the rate cap for 3.5 years to match the duration of the construction project. A lot of the deals that were bought in 2021, 22 may have purchased the rate cap for only the first 1 year, maybe 2 years, 3 years. No one bought it for the full duration of the business plan, which typically is a 5-year hold. And that's really the difference. And so now that a lot of these projects that we're buying today or we're underwriting for today, we are using the new normal of high interest rate environments to underwrite these deals. So the concerns that people had about interest rates being out of control primarily will not affect new purchases. The property that's already been purchased, there's a couple scenarios with that. Either the team, the general partnership team, are able to operate the property in such a way that they can afford to buy a new rate cap. They have reserves in place, or they raise a little bit extra capital to buy the rate cap. That's like the good scenario. That's the one where, hey, operations is still doing really well. We just need this money to buy this one component, right? And then, you know, there's a saying that's like survive to thrive. That's sort of the scenario. Wait for interest rate to drop. Wait for valuation to increase again, because interest rate drops has a opposite direction of value. So as interest rates starts dropping, the ability of someone to buy a property goes up, right? So that's the scenario that we're seeing right now. while interest rate itself may be something we can account for, the next one is also something that has a major impact, and it all has to do with where you buy. So it's about location, location, location. Obviously, that's a cliche real estate term. So the next concern maybe keeping investor up at night is the headlines of U.S. housing oversupply. And I don't know exactly what that kind of headline really implies, because everyone knows that real estate is really, really on a micro level, not macro. So when you take an average of units being built across the United States and you're trying to pin that to a specific city, it doesn't work that way. The oversupply in one city may mean undersupply in another city. And that's why the location is so much more important. And why do I say this? Is because if you look at the demographic post-pandemic, Americans are migrating within the United States. And specifically, they're migrating to the South. That's where there's a lot of booms. There's states that are losing residents, but the South, they're definitely not losing residents. So where are these growth? So for instance, if you look at Florida, they have the fastest GDP growth of any states, exceeding 20%. And they also have a 9% increase in jobs, right? Texas job GDP grew by 14%, and they had a 9% increase in job growth, and a 5.6% in itself in 2023. Rocky Mountain states, rapid GDP growth, also have job growth due to remote working opportunities. States like Idaho, Utah, Arizona, and Colorado are seeing a lot of the boom in the Rocky Mountains regions. And no coincidence, these are also areas where a lot of apartment investors are finding value in owning apartments in those areas. States and cities, areas in general that are lagging behind right now is California. Though California has a GDP growth driven by the tech boom, it's still really having a very low job growth, around 1%. Washington State also has higher GDP growth thanks to their tech boom as well. And they have a slightly stronger job market than California. The area where you see a lot of struggles is the Northeast and the Midwest, where weak GDP growth, job numbers that haven't recovered, is playing a substantial role in supply and demand issues, especially in states like Illinois and New York. While some markets obviously are indeed experiencing surges, the key to navigating this is by choosing your market strategically. And we have a guide on how to locate what are the best states to invest in. We'll have the link in the description below for you to access that. So check that out if you don't know or are looking for where to invest in these properties. So for instance, for us, if you know the Kitty Sisters, you know that we're very bullish on the Sun Belt and mountain regions, where the population growth is strong and there's new supplies coming in, but it's not actually exceeding demands. So in last week's episode that I went live on, I talked about how people were expecting oversupply to really crush the real estate demand market in 2024. However, that wasn't the case. The last quarter of 2024 actually saw a near 3-year high in demands. Around 666,000 units that were actually absorbed in that year, highest since early 2022. But again, the demand of this isn't the same everywhere. Some cities are more active than others. And you can see in Texas at the time we spoke about Dallas, Houston, even Austin and Fort Worth, where Dallas had the highest absorption of new properties coming online being built, around 36,000 units. And Houston, not far behind, they were around 31,000 units. So Texas is leading on both the demands on new apartments coming into play. So another part of the shift happens because of remote working. People are choosing more spacious and more affordable suburban living. That impacts where they're living. Housing construction is also an interesting one. States like Florida and Texas, where there's more deregulized construction zoning or permitting process, you can see homes being built at a much faster pace, attracting more people to move into the area, and also relatively lower purchasing prices as well compared to states like New York and California. New York and California, outside of some finance and tech sectors, are seeing some economic weakening as well. That's contributing to the overall desire for people to move away from the U.S., from the states. And given the recent events that just happened, the SoCal fire, you can see that. I know that a lot of people probably can't move right away because of their job, but given that some of them do not have it on their properties and still having to pay mortgages on some of these, it's going to be a strain for them to live in the state. And some people who were already inclined to move, they may feel like this is where they'll be pushed over the edge. Okay, so we've talked about high interest rates and how the new normal, if you underwrite it properly, that can be something that can be addressed. And for properties that are already in existence, if it's not an operational issue, if the occupancy is still strong, if income is still coming in, and you don't have a bloated expense number, you can get through this through purchasing new rate cap or an extension or negotiating some modification of your loan with your lender. Also, for oversupply, also we just discussed, isn't as bad as people may have made it out to be. So the other thing that's looming that's sort of tied into the interest rate piece is distressed assets and loan defaults. So obviously, there's a lot of debt that's maturing. In fact, $2.5 trillion is expected to mature very shortly, especially for properties that were purchased between 2020 and 2021. There's some concerns about this. Of course, this is something that a lot of investors have to understand and tackle. Part of the thing that we're seeing a lot right now is that lenders are being flexible and are willing to modify and extend loans within reasons. And where they choose to do this is with properties that have good operations, where they see like it's where they completely understand the story that it's not about the underlying asset. It's not about the operation from the team, the general partnership team that's screwing up the deal. It's the macroeconomic that all of us are facing. So as much as possible, they're willing to accommodate and help modify terms so that the deal can actually survive and thrive to the point where market recovers and we can sell, hopefully with a sizable ROI for our investors. The other thing about this is, and I know I've spoken about, hey, it's a buyer's market. It's coming for many years. Since basically about 2023. And people were like, oh, Pommy, like I've heard that a lot and it hasn't happened. Unfortunately for the people who have to sell, and fortunate for people who are looking to buy, I really do think it's happening. And it's a combination of a couple of things. So first rate cap purchase, right? Let's say they bought in 2020 or 21. So first rate cap purchase, they were able to get through that maybe early 2024, maybe a little bit later 2024. And they're just hoping the interest rate will just keep dropping, but they're barely teetering on. And now who knows, there's talks of, I don't think there will be an interest rate hike this year, but if it doesn't drop more, what happens to the rate cap purchase? Can they afford to buy it? Properties like ours right now, like we just bought one for a couple hundred thousand dollars. That's an amount of money that you can raise. You can put money into. You may have it in reserves. That's fine. So properties like ours should be okay. What about the people who don't have that funds? What about people who have rate cap now that are in the millions of dollars? Or the ones that have to have a rebalancing of their loan because the valuation drops so much? What happens to those properties? In that case, they need buyers. And so if you're looking for properties that are going to be 20, 30, maybe even 40% less than their peak price in 2021, this is probably the best time to buy these properties. I think like the people who are able to buy in this kind of scenario will have the ability to, number one, underwrite for interest rates, right? Number two, be able to ride out the wave. And so when you sell, it'll probably be the highest return you've seen in the next cycle, because this will be basically at the most bottom point of the market cycle, of this current market cycle. So while distressed assets are real, loan maturities are real, this is a chance for you to look and seek out properties that you maybe wouldn't have been able to purchase at that kind of pricing to begin with. And I want to stress again, there's a couple of key things when I'm looking at these properties. Number one, I only look for A-class assets in really strong neighborhoods with high economic drivers and also high income demographics. I saw a case in point with our properties when we have a property that the average median income within 1 mile radius is $180,000. And I saw that during the pandemic, and even now with high interest rate, high inflation, we continuously are able to raise rents. While in C-class or properties that are built in the 1970s in more workforce housing type properties, guys, like there's so much money you can try to raise rents all you want. People just can't afford it. They can't afford it. So there's a ceiling on how much the growth can be in those apartments. So that's the first thing when I'm looking for these distressed deals. The other one is I'm also looking at, hey, is it an operational issue or is it a property issue? If the property itself is just not in a good property vacancy is going to be an issue, you have crime issues, or you just, you're not going to be able to fix it simply by just having longer time duration and being better at operating a property, managing the property, then that's not a property that we would look to buy. We have very, very basic and simple business plans. We go in there and we know that small tweaks to the underlying property can make massive differences. So we don't want to jump through massive hoops. If you're telling me, hey, you have to vacate half the units, we have to have all these, a whole bunch of stuff that has to happen in order for the property to thrive, then that's not our property. That would be something we look to. When there's distress, when there's stuff on sale, now you get to cherry pick from the best of the best. So don't settle for something. If you're uncertain, if the number doesn't really make sense, don't buy it or don't invest in it. Wait for the things that will make the most sense. So again, if it's sales time, it's time for you to buy. The next one that a lot of people may have concern about is, hey, property tax cost is going up, right? So that's like one of the issues also in the industry. It's like beyond interest rates is like, man, insurance prices are really going up. And maybe it'll go up even more with the fire in California. I don't know. What we've seen so far in late 2024 is that the premium is actually starting to stabilize. And another thing about this one is that like location plays a key role. If you choose to invest in states that have a lot of natural disasters, aka Florida, you're going to see a lot more pricing hikes that can happen when there's a storm or when there's an issue. You'll see that all of a sudden prices for insurance are going to skyrocket. But if you choose areas that have less natural disasters, one of the market I would say would be like Phoenix for that, then that would be something where insurance would be less of an issue for you. The other part is that like if you account for it, if you underwrite for what you think that what is today's cost versus, you know, like when I first started 6 years ago, multifamily, I think $300 to $400 per unit of cost for insurance was like what people underwrote for. But today it's closer to like $1,000, $1,100, something like that, especially in states like Texas. If you guys have bought any apartment insurance, let me know, because like, yeah, we feel your pain. The other uncertainty in the market right now, and what we would call like the dark side of multifamily that people fear, is a political one. It's a one that's going to happen in the next few days, like 5 days from now. President Trump's going to take over in the second term. This is something that, love him or hate him, he's the president right now. So there's two school of thoughts. The first one is that, hey, there's going to be a lot of deregulation. There's going to be bring back the bonus depreciation at 100%. Those are things that will help investors. Some of the deregulation may help with our construction as well. Like as we start doing more construction projects, we know that if we are in environments where the cities and the authorities make it easier for us to build units, that helps reduce our costs. That means that we're also able to pass that savings onto either the buyer or the tenants that's going to be renting our property. On the other side of that, there's fears of tariffs. Potentially, there's talks about across the board 10 to 20% tariff for all imports, and tariffs from Chinese imports may be as high as like 60%. If that happens, what's going to happen to costs of things that are used to fix apartments, build apartments, all that stuff, right? So those are things that we don't know the answer to right now. And on top of that, there's this Deutsch thing where Elon is launching, like, is part of the initiative where potentially they're going to cut a whole bunch of expenses, anything, quote unquote, that's bloating out of the budget. I don't know what they plan to cut. And if they cut some of the stuff, okay, technically, if you cut a whole bunch of expenses and we already have a deficit, it's going to help, right? So we don't know. Those are some uncertainty that we can't account for. But I think there are some ideas of, okay, so like, here's how I'm approaching purchasing things in 2025. And this is like completely based on my reaction to how things are happening right now. The first thing is I will only buy new apartments that I feel I'm getting at a very, very discounted price. And I feel like there's strong chance that the operation is easy to manage, right? So that's number one. The second one is I'm looking for opportunities, a slight shift. If I can't buy the properties, what is the second best thing? I'm looking to be the lender, right? I'm looking to do do the private lending, private capital. You see companies like firms like Blackstone, who's now their biggest business is private capital. And it's for a reason. They've made the most amount of money in private capital. So if you look at high interest rates and you're like, Pommy, I've been modeling these deals and I can't find one that pencils out, perhaps shift your focus from, instead of just looking to buy the apartments, what about if you invest in debt funds that are lending money to these apartments that are getting 12, 15, 17% interest? That's perhaps something that may be of interest to you. The other one that I'm really, really bullish about is actually doing our BTR, build to rent and build to sell strategies, both of which are the hottest thing in the market right now, because I think there's still some disconnect. Reluctantly, the sellers don't want to sell unless they have to, right? So therefore, until they have to, that's when they're going to be willing to do the fire sale. Those who don't, they're going to hold on to these properties because they can't. Like for our property that we bought with the 3.49 fixed debt that has right now 36 years left on the loan term, we're not going to sell it. There's no reason to. So in that scenario, what else can you do? Like where is the space where you see a need? That's like debt funds. That's private capital. That's where the space where, for me, if I'm an investor and I'm frustrated, I have investors who reach out to me and say, Pommy, when's your next deal? When are you going to have another deal? And yeah, it's frustrating to me too that I haven't had one yet, but that's an opportunity that I'm seeing now. Debt front is the new frontier that I feel like used to be relegated to really like the Blackstone people who have millions of dollars to invest with them or hundreds of thousands of dollars. But now you have an opportunity to get something similar through people like us. So that's another opportunity I think that would be very, very interesting. So the three scenarios that I'm looking at right now is buying existing properties that are at a discount, but they're exceptional properties, working through, start investing through debt funds to get that kind of fixed return, premium return, probably higher than what you would normally get right now on returns on purchasing a property, unless you get a discount. And the third one is doing new developments. The reason new development makes sense for us is because we're able to buy, because we're the GC, we're able to buy raw land and force appreciate the value at every step of the way, instead of letting that value be something we have to pay for. So that's the difference. We make that, we create that value versus we pay for that value. You see that difference, right? So if you're an investor who's hungry for an opportunity, you have to think about this as time to be on the offensive. No one makes money if they're passively sitting back and pausing. So there's super chance of supercharging your portfolio that way. Forget about like listening to some random person telling you what to do on the internet, blindly following YouTube influencer. What you need to do is come up with your own objective and then figure out what would make sense for you. I gave you three of the scenarios we're using. If some of those make sense for you, feel free to definitely tap into those. Understanding that what's really happening is you need to get yourself financially educated. You can't panic and just dodge everything, just put a blinders on because of all the headlines screaming, making you feel like there's this dark side that's closing on the multifamily sector. People are going to thrive in this environment. It might as well be you. When the masses fear the end of the world, financial world, that's your cue for you to actually jump in. Where they see chaos, you need to see opportunities. If you're financially savvy, you're going to be able to turn these chaotic times into your playground for wealth creation while everyone else is just losing their heads. You're cool, calculate, allowing you to spot and seize opportunities that other people are missing. That's like wrapping up your financial education is so important and most important actually before anything else. So make sure that you get financially educated. If you want to learn more about what I've talked about in this live stream, go ahead and join our waiting list for our new community, Wealth Beyond Me. That's where you're going to get a lot of this insight so that you can be on the offensive, because right now it's game time and we don't want you to miss out on anything.
We can't wait to begin this journey with you. Check us out at thekittysisters.com/podcast.